The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, let's get right into it. We got a big fight coming up this weekend in UFC. It's UFC 277. And to me, the only worthwhile aspect of the fight this weekend is going to be the main event, which is Juliana Pena versus Amanda Nunes. And Amanda Nunes has been the most dominating female fighter in UFC for a few years now. And she's just got hands of steel. She just will annihilate motherfuckers, and she's done it for many years now. But Juliana Pena, a couple months ago, they faced off, what, in like December, I think it was when they fought. And it was one of the most entertaining fights in UFC history, at least in my opinion. I mean, because the both of them, they came to fight. And they just were delivering blow after blow. And especially in the second round, like, they were just trading barbs. It was like Amanda would punch Juliana in the face, and then Juliana would get her with a couple blows. And it was just a crazy fight to watch. It was just everything that you want in a UFC fight, at least in my opinion. And just what happened was, is Juliana Pena, she did not back down at any point. She was delivering blows, and she stuck to her game plan. And you could tell what her game plan was, is that she's just going to work Amanda, and she basically wore her out. And what Nunes was basically doing is she was just delivering really heavy blows, but they weren't connecting. So she was wasting a lot of energy. And so what ended up happening is Juliana Pena just ended up hitting her with a really good hit, and then ended up getting her in a compromised position. And Nunes ended up having to tap out, and she was submitted in the second round. And it was just an amazing fight. So this weekend's fight, I'm expecting to be just as good, because you know Juliana Pena, nobody believed she was going to win that last match, and as a matter of fact, nobody believes she's going to win this match either. But what I like about her is she's got great confidence. She also has great respect for Nunes as well, and so while Nunes is favored in this fight, I still expect Juliana to give her best fight. And I wouldn't be shocked if she ended up winning again. But I do think Amanda Nunes was humbled in her last fight. And I do think she's going to come out, and I think she's going to get revenge, and I think she's going to get the win. I don't know if it's going to be a knockout. I mean, you know, that is what Nunes is known for, is being a knockout queen. But Juliana Pena's got a, she's got a steel jaw, man. Like, she could take a hit. She was taking some massive hits in the last one. So, I it's going to be a very interesting fight. I'm totally looking forward to this. Like I said, I've got Nunes avenging her loss, but I think Pena's going to give it her all. I don't think she's scared at all, and I think she's happy to defend her title this weekend. So, it's going to be a great fight. I'm looking forward to it. No matter who wins, I think both fighters, I respect both of them, but I'm just looking forward to another great fight between these two. All right, now that NFL has started, training camp started this week, and so we actually have a shit ton of football to get into. But first, there was actually something of interest on Twitter this week that I saw. I know, very shocking that there was actually something of interest found on social media, not just some losers arguing with each other about dumbass bullshit. Although I guess what I'm discussing could be a mentally challenged argument between stupid, idiotic sports fans, but I just looked at it and I was like, wow, that's a very interesting question. And so Pro Football Focus, they actually posed the question, who is on your football Mount Rushmore? And it was very difficult for me to disagree with three of the four on their Mount Rushmore. The fourth one, I see the argument that you could make for him, but I actually am going to replace somebody else with him on my Mount Rushmore. So let's just kick it off. But three of them I definitely have on my Mount Rushmore. So let's start it off with Tom Brady, of course. He is the greatest quarterback of all time, and he's definitely one of the greatest football players of all time. He has the most Super Bowls. He owns pretty much every record that a quarterback can own. So you really 100% have to have Tom Brady on your Mount Rushmore, and they had him on their Mount Rushmore. He's also on mine for sure. Then they had Lawrence Taylor, one of the greatest defensive players of all time, one of the greatest linebackers of all time, played for the New York Giants. And I also agree with them as well. I would definitely have him on my Mount Rushmore just because, as far as defenders go, he is probably the top defender of all time. He really changed the way defenses were played back in the 80s. And he was a game changer, a game maker. And he just was an amazing defensive player. And you really can't argue against Lawrence Taylor being one of the greatest of all time. And I couldn't think of, there are a couple people I could think of who possibly could replace him on Mount Rushmore, but he would be on mine as well. So I agree with them as well, with Tom Brady, Lawrence Taylor. And then third, they had Jerry Rice. And you can't, in my, also my personal opinion, you can't not have a Mount Rushmore and not put Jerry Rice on there. And because he was one of the greatest football players, not just wide receivers, but one of the greatest football players of all time. I mean, his work ethic was insane. He owns a ton of records in the league still to this day. He was legendary from start to finish. And so you can't not have Jerry Rice on my Mount Rushmore. Now, the fourth player, it's hard to make arguments against. He's definitely one of my favorite football players of all time. I've mentioned it before. If you did not get to watch this football player play, I feel sorry for you. And his name is Deion Sanders. I see why they put him on there. I think they kind of wanted to balance it out and put two offensive players on there, as well as two defensive players, which is what they did. Deion Sanders, he changed the sport as well. Hands down, I think he's the best cornerback of all time, and he was electric. He was actually, he played on all three, basically in all three facets of the game. He played defense, of course, he played cornerback. Then he would also come in on offense on occasions and play wide receiver, but then he would also do kick returns, punt returns and kick returns, and he was just electric at everything he did. So it really was difficult for me to argue against Deion Sanders being on Mount Rushmore football, but I am going to replace him with somebody. And I'm going to replace him with Jim Brown, just because Jim Brown is one of the greatest football players ever of all time. Not that Deion Sanders isn't, of course he is, but to me, it's really difficult to argue against Jim Brown. Just the fact that he, you know, averaged 100 yards a game in every game he played in. He went over 2,000 yards. And he basically started football. He was basically the face of football, really, before what it's turned into today. So I personally am going to replace Deion Sanders with Jim Brown. And my football Mount Rushmore would be Tom Brady, Lawrence Taylor, Jerry Rice, and Jim Brown. But and then just a couple of other players that I think deserve to be mentioned, but I didn't think they elevated to be above all these four players that I put on there. One would be Dick Butkus, of course, one of the greatest linebackers of all time. Then also Walter Payton, another spectacular running back. And then Reggie White, another perennial defensive end who also changed the game. So those are who I would make my Mount Rushmore, and then also just discuss a couple other players who could be on Mount Rushmore. But I thought it was interesting just to see Deion Sanders on Pro Football Focus's Mount Rushmore, which, like I said, it was very difficult for me to argue against. I even considered keeping him on my list, but once I thought of Jim Brown, I immediately was like, no, there's no way I can't not have Jim Brown on my Mount Rushmore. So like I said, my football Mount Rushmore would be Tom Brady, Lawrence Taylor, Jerry Rice, and Jim Brown. All right, now let's move on to what happened in training camp all week. First of all, the Dallas Cowboys kicked off their training camp. On Monday, they had some press conferences, but then also Tuesday as well. And then Wednesday is when they got on the field. But I believe it was Tuesday, Mike McCarthy, at his first press conference, was basically asked about his job security. Now, we all basically believe that Mike McCarthy's job is not safe this year. One being just because last year it wasn't a horrible year, but it was a failure, definitely. But usually you don't want to put a short leash on your coach. But I think with the fact that Sean Payton is he's going to be available for a head coaching position next year. And then we also have Dan Quinn, who all of the players on the Cowboys team really respect. And he was getting job offers this year, but he ended up staying with the Cowboys as the defensive coordinator. But also with him on the team and gaining the respect of all the players, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Mike McCarthy and the success of this team. If the Cowboys don't win a playoff game this year, I kind of feel like they have to at least make the NFC Championship to say they've had a successful season. Obviously, the ultimate goal is to win a Super Bowl. But you can always build. If you go to the championship game, you can always build off of that. And usually if you go to the championship game the next year, there's a good shot that you're going to the Super Bowl. And so Mike McCarthy, yes, his job, he's on a short leash. Whether Jerry Jones says it or not, he's on a short leash. And he should be. But the press asking him that at the first press conference of the season of training camp is ridiculous. And he did lose his shit. And he basically was like, this is not a football question. I don't understand why you're asking me about my job security on day one. And I agree with him flipping out about it. So I can't say that I disagree with his stance on it, but I definitely think Mike McCarthy is definitely under the gun this year, and the Cowboys do need to have a solid season for him to continue on as the Dallas Cowboys coach into next year. Then also, what happened this week is Tyreek Hill, he was traded from the Kansas City Chiefs to the Miami Dolphins a few months ago, and he was under fire because he first had made comments about Tua Tagovailoa, the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins right now, and his accuracy. And he basically had said that he's more accurate than Patrick Mahomes, which is extremely laughable. Now, I understand that Tyreek Hill does have to talk up his current team, especially his current quarterback. He wants to make sure that his quarterback trusts in him and he trusts in his quarterback. Totally get it. But let's not get too hasty here and start putting the two names of Patrick Mahomes and Tua Tagovailoa in the same sentence as far as being good quarterbacks, because that's not even close. Patrick Mahomes is at the top of the food chain, whereas Tua is literally at the bottom. He's barely above a backup at this current point in time. Now, with Tyreek Hill joining the Dolphins this year, it should actually make him look a little better this year, but still, come on, let's not get too hasty. And Tyreek Hill, he was asked about it again this week, and he basically stuck to his guns and said yes, that Tua is one of the most accurate quarterbacks he's ever worked with. So, I mean, hey, good for him. Like I said, you got to talk up your dude, but yeah, you shouldn't be dissing Patrick Mahomes in the same breath, because you're probably going to piss him off. You guys are both in the same conference, so it's possible y'all could face off against each other at some point, and I wouldn't be shocked if Mahomes lit up the Dolphins, because they're not that good of a team, at least from what they've shown so far. But it's been interesting conversation to listen to Tyreek Hill talk up Tua like this against Mahomes when it's not even a competition. And like I said, you need to talk up your quarterback like that, but let's not sound like a complete moron like that. Then also this week, Julio Jones, he ended up signing with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I think that's a great fit for him, because Julio Jones, I don't think is, he's obviously lost a step. He's no longer the number one receiver he used to be. Obviously, Julio Jones, for a very long period of time, was the top receiver in the league. Could not argue with that. Now, he's kind of taken a step back. I'm sure injuries have kind of fucked him over, as well as just his age. He didn't really have a successful year with the Titans last year, but I do expect him to have a good year with the Buccaneers. Not only is his quarterback Tom Brady, but you also have Chris Godwin and Mike Evans there, so he doesn't have to be the number one dude, which I think is absolutely 100% perfect for this offense. I think he's going to fill it more in that Rob Gronkowski role, where he's going to end up open and he's going to make big plays because he still has the big plays in him. So I think that's a huge signing for both Julio Jones and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Unfortunately, the Buccaneers got some bad news yesterday. Training camp did just start, and this always happens every training camp. And unfortunately, their starting center, Ryan Jensen, the workhorse of this offensive line, especially since Tom Brady took over, he suffered a pretty bad-looking knee injury yesterday in practice. The MRI results haven't come out yet, so we don't know if he's torn any ligaments or anything. But it's possible that Ryan Jensen may end up missing, if not the entire season, it looks like he's going to miss a good portion of the season. So that's not a good way for the Tampa Bay Bucs offensive line to start the season off. But that's the way the cookie crumbles, man, is that every training camp this happens, where guys will just come right out and suffer a torn ACL or a blown Achilles on like their first drop back. And it always sucks to see, but it's a part of the game. Then also this week, the starting quarterback, Joe Burrow of the Cincinnati Bengals, he ended up having to have an appendectomy a couple days ago. It sounded like he's going to be okay. It's just the beginning of training camp, so it's better that it happened now rather than in the middle of the season. I also don't think that's a good way to start your season off if you're the Cincinnati Bengals. I already kind of have a feeling that they're going to suffer from a Super Bowl hangover, and starting training camp off without Joe Burrow and him having to have an appendectomy to start the season, while it's not like a debilitating football injury, it's not a good way to start the season off. Also, the San Francisco 49ers announced that Trey Lance has officially been named their starter, which I think is a great way to start the season off. You don't want to go into training camp with, is it going to be Jimmy G? Is it going to be Trey Lance? No, they drafted Trey Lance last year. They gave up a whole lot to get Trey Lance in the offseason last year in the draft. So they basically had to go with Trey Lance this year. Jimmy Garoppolo, they've said he's able to seek out a trade wherever he wants to go, that they'll work out a trade with him. So that's a good thing for the Niners that they officially announced that Trey Lance is going to be the starter. I don't know how I feel about him as opposed to Jimmy Garoppolo. Like I said, I kind of felt like they should have just built around Jimmy G, but they have chosen to go with Trey Lance, so we don't have to discuss that anymore. It's just going to be now, where is Jimmy G going to end up, or are they just going to release him? Now, I don't think they have a problem if Jimmy G's their backup. I think the 49ers can actually play hardball and decide to not trade him if they don't get the deal they're looking for. There really aren't a lot of options for Jimmy G either, unless he gets released, of course. But the 49ers, they don't have to release him, and it might not be a bad thing if he ends up as their backup. But I think they'll end up trading him at some point here pretty soon. But it is nice for them that they won't have the quarterback drama of the constant of who's going to be the starting quarterback, because you know the media is going to be asking it every day. So they got that out of the way. Trey Lance is now officially the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. Also, the wide receiver DK Metcalf of the Seattle Seahawks, he ended up signing a 3-year extension yesterday for $72 million. So congratulations to him. That was definitely what he wanted, because his production level is obviously going to go down this year, because the starting quarterback's either going to be Geno Smith or Drew Lock, two very mediocre quarterbacks, two quarterbacks who really are only backups at this point. So good for DK Metcalf, because his production level is definitely going to go down with whoever is at quarterback. So he at least got his extension, got his money, and so he can get back to just playing football for the shitty-ass Seattle Seahawks. And then also in Seahawks news, the starting safety, Jamal Adams, who they traded away a lot of draft picks for a couple seasons ago to get him. And then last year, he ended up missing the second half of the season because what did he suffer, like an elbow injury? He suffered some type of injury where he ended up missing the entire second half of the season. And now he's starting out the season injured. He is actually going to be out indefinitely at this point because he had some finger surgery this offseason. And they haven't really said what the deal is, but he's at least out indefinitely right now, and that's not a good thing for the Seattle Seahawks because they're already a depleted team, and he was their top guy on defense, and it's looking like they're not going to have him to at least start the season. Then in just some random news that I was reading up on, as you all know, if you've been listening to the show or if you know me, you know that I'm a huge fan of weed, and I love weed. And like I said, when I went to Denver a couple weeks ago, I tried Mike Tyson's weed, Tyson 2.0, up there, and I was a big fan of that. And I was also reading about Ricky Williams has a new line of cannabis as well called Heisman, spelled H-I-G-H-S-M-A-N, like Heisman instead of spelled like the Heisman Trophy because, you know, he won a Heisman Trophy, so I think that's a perfect name. But I did want to just let all these athletes know who have now been getting into the cannabis industry. If you are interested in sponsoring my show, I would love to not only advertise the hell out of y'all and talk about how great your weed is, I would love to partake and try out your product. So if you're interested, hit me up because I've got 21 years experience of smoking weed, so I know what I'm talking about when it comes to weed. I've been smoking it every single day for 21 years. I've never said to myself, I'm going to give it up. So any of you, Ricky Williams, Mike Tyson, I know there's some other athletes who've been getting into this. If you are interested in sponsorship with Sports Talk with Trop, hit me up because I'm down. I'm 100% down to give that shit a try. And then last in the NFL discussion, there's always new safety measures going into place, whether it be new rules or new equipment that they wear. And starting last year, you may have noticed that there's these new little idiotic things they've been putting over the helmets. That's basically like padding, like you put the helmet on and then there's like padding on the helmet. So it makes them look like they have like big yarn balls on their fucking head. Now, in practice, it's not that big of a deal to me. they're supposed to lower concussions by 10 to 20, a whole whopping 10 to 20%. Now, to some people, that sounds like a lot. To me, that's absolutely nothing. If you were to tell me, oh, this improves something 10 to 20%, I'd look at you and say, suck my motherfucking dick. That's not a huge percentage, but we got to pretend we have to give a shit about people and their safety and health when they're running into each other at 40 miles per hour, running head on into each other and tackling each other. But yeah, let's make sports and football a lot more safe. So you've been seeing these guys wear what they're known as guardian caps in practice. Now they've made it a mandatory rule that the first two preseason games, certain positions are going to be wearing these mentally challenged helmets in preseason games. I know you're not supposed to these days make fun of or call people pussies or talk about the softness of the way the world is now, but it's my show and I'm going to fucking do that. I know everybody these days is supposed to act like we don't get off on seeing grown-ass adults knock each other out in UFC fights or in boxing matches or see grown-ass dudes in football games literally launch into each other like missiles and just knock a motherfucker out. We're supposed to act like we don't actually like that part of the game, even though we all fucking do. And so now you're no longer allowed to discuss the pussification of the world and in sports in general. And to me, these guardian caps are 100% the pussification of sports. Like I said, I'm not against quote, making it safer, even though I think that's just retarded in general. But okay, that's cute. Let's make it 10% or 20% more safer, even though the hilarious thing, now that we've been focusing so much on concussions over the last, like, 10, 15 years of football, just so y'all know, injuries actually haven't gone down. They've actually increased. So much so that, like, knee injuries and shoulder injuries and neck injuries are up I don't know the exact statistics because I didn't really give a shit to look it up, but I do know that as a fact, that all those injuries have actually gone up. So while we sit around focusing on the almighty concussion, injuries actually haven't gone down. They don't continue to go down. We just continue to look like morons. As a matter of fact, these dumbass little Guardian caps to me look like, if you're a South Park fan and you've watched any of the new specials that they've had on Paramount Plus, one of the first ones they did was they were kind of mocking COVID and the stupid idiocy of how we've reacted towards COVID. And one of the things that they did is basically the boys were set in the future, and people in the future were actually wearing like yarn balls around their head. And so that's what these Guardian caps look like to me, is that these stupid, idiotic things that they were mocking in South Park a couple months ago. Like I said, do what the hell you want. I know the NFL has to shut up all the whiny crybabies who were upset over concussions years ago. And we have to act like we all give a crap, and media members are always, they no longer criticize things like this. We're all supposed to act like we give a shit about safety, and we don't enjoy watching grown-ass adults run head-on into each other, even though we do. But like I said, this is my show, and I come at it with a different angle, and I think these Guardian caps are fucking stupid, and I'm going to say they're fucking stupid, but do what you want, y'all. At least I still get to watch football, and I don't have to wear those stupid, mentally retarded Guardian caps. But the NFL is going to save the world, you know. Everybody's going to be safe and secure, and we're all going to live an amazing life of safety. Anyways, now let's move on to some baseball. First, I did want to discuss the new documentary on ESPN Plus now called The Captain. It's basically about Derek Jeter's career. And I really got to say, man, ESPN has been really knocking it out of the park the last 3 years now with the documentaries. First, in 2020, we got the Michael Jordan documentary, which was awesome. Then last year, we got the Tom Brady documentary, which was awesome. And now we're getting this Derek Jeter documentary, which is also awesome. I think the third episode just premiered on Thursday night, which I haven't got to yet. But the first two episodes I've really enjoyed. And I really like how in-depth they have gone, and just how they've broken down certain games, and how you've really been able to kind of get to know the personalities of all Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, and Derek Jeter. Three of the greatest players in their sports as well. So if you if you're a baseball fan, especially if you're a Yankee fan or a Derek Jeter fan, definitely check out The Captain. So far, I've enjoyed all the episodes that I've watched. Then this week in baseball, let's see what happened. On Tuesday night, Brian Snitker, the manager of the Atlanta Braves, he ended up getting his 500th career win, so congratulations to him. Then on Wednesday, the New York Yankees ended up trading for Andrew Benintendi from the Kansas City Royals, so they have bolstered their offense, which they definitely needed because they ended up getting swept this week by the New York Mets. The New York Mets dominated the Yankees this week. Not only did they dominate them, but man, Max Scherzer, he came out and he had a dominating game. Not only did he dominate the Yankees, but he dominated Aaron Judge, the league leader in home runs with 39 home runs. He struck him out 3 times in a row at the plate. So, and that was on Max Scherzer's birthday, by the way. He's pitched on his birthday 5 times, and he is now 5-0 and has something like a 1.15 ERA. So Max Scherzer, man, that dude's he's just killing it. But so are the Mets, and they dominated a really good fucking team. So that's a possibility right there where we might have gotten a preview of the World Series between those two. Then last night, there was a very interesting play in the Tampa Bay Rays versus Baltimore Orioles game. Baltimore Orioles, Trey Mancini hit a ball towards the outfield. And there was a rookie in the outfield, and he couldn't really locate the ball, and it ended up hitting him right in the face. And so he couldn't locate the ball after that, and Trey Mancini ended up hitting an inside-the-park home run off of a very hilarious play. Then also yesterday, Shohei Ohtani had yet another an amazing pitching outing. He ended up striking out 10 guys, and that is the 6th game in a row where Shohei Ohtani has had 10-plus strikeouts in a game. So he has been having one hell of a season. We'll see. There's rumblings that he may get traded away from the Angels. I don't think they're going to trade him away unless they get an amazing offer that they just can't refuse. But I don't know why you would trade this guy away. He's definitely going to put some asses in the seats, if anything, for the Angels. And then speaking of the Angels, also Mike Trout, their outfielder, he's been out for the last week. And it looks like he's going to need some more time off. And it's also been revealed that he is suffering from a very unique and rare injury to his back, his spine. And it's called a costovertebral dysfunction at the T5 level. I've mentioned before, I'm a paralegal for a workers' comp attorney. So one thing that I have to do in my job is medical research, because our evidence is medical records. And so I'm obviously not a doctor, but I do need to make sure I'm familiar with whatever's going on in those medical records. And so what I ended up doing was I Googled what this was. And it sounds like a very debilitating injury, especially for a baseball player. So your spine is basically broken down into three sections. The first is the cervical, which is basically the top of your spine, which is basically from the base of your brain down to like the middle of your shoulder blades, kind of. And then the middle of your spine is your thoracic spine, which basically holds up all of your ribs. It's where all the ribs are connected. And so that's the T-spine. And then the bottom of your spine is the lumbar, basically from below your ribs all the way down to what is known as your coccyx. That is the bottom, basically the bottom of your butt. So where Mike Trout has this injury is at the T5 level. So it's kind of where your the top of the rib connects to the spine. And if you really think about it, that makes sense why he has this injury, because basically it's the middle area. And, you know, Mike Trout has a very violent swing. If you've ever watched him, this dude, he just cranks and yanks. And I see why he would get this type of injury. Because if you think about it, like, he's cranking and yanking, and then he's just going all the way across the front of his body, all the way through. So that's definitely going to be something that hampers him for a while. And the trainers for the Angels said it's going to be something that he's going to have to deal with for the rest of his career. At first, you know, when you say something like that, of course, the media is going to freak out. So then Mike Trout came out the next day and was like, it's not as serious as it sounds. It's more like it's something I'm going to have to manage the rest of my career. It's not career ending. It's just something that he's going to have to focus on, that where he's probably going to have to come in every game day before game day and get some type of treatment, whether it be a steroid shot or some type of massage there. Regardless, it's something he's going to have to deal with the rest of his career. Like I said, when I went and read it and saw what this actually is, I'm like, damn, that's going to be something very difficult for somebody with such a violent swing to manage. But, you know, he is Mike Trout. He's a great baseball player, and hopefully this doesn't ruin his career, but my guess is he's probably been playing with this for a minute. He's just now been diagnosed with it, or now it's just been coming to light to the rest of us. Then also this week, it's actually something I've noticed all season long, but I did mention there's this new technology that they've been using in Major League Baseball this year called PitchCom. Basically what it is instead of using signals, the hand signals to tell the pitcher what pitch to pitch, the catcher now has this button system on his, like, knee area, his leg area. And instead of, like, making up signs to throw a curveball or to throw a fastball, it just has a button that says fastball. And all the infielders and the pitcher have like a little thing in their ear, and that tells them what the call is. Now, When I first saw this, I was like, oh, wow, this is an awesome invention. I think this is great because, you know, sign stealing, especially over the last couple of years, has become a big, big hot topic. So it's good that they added this, but there's been nothing but problems. And I've noticed it in, I'd say, at least half of the games I've watched this year, and I do watch a lot of baseball, that there's been some type of issue with PitchCom at some point in the game between the pitcher and the catcher. It's not as big a deal with the infielders, but it's obviously the pitcher and the catcher need to be in sync with each other. And so I've definitely noticed that it's turned into a major issue for most of the pitchers and catchers this season, because you could tell it just keeps going out. They keep having to stop the game to get it back in order. And even Max Scherzer, he said something about it the other night where he was all like, this thing is stupid. I do not like it. It keeps going out. It has not worked. But also at the same time, this is the first year that they're using it. So there's obviously going to be issues and kinks that they're going to need to work out in the offseason. But it has been kind of funny because I have noticed in at least half of the games that I've watched this year that this PitchCom system has not been working out that well. And then the last thing I wanted to discuss in baseball, it's not really anything that's actually happened in baseball, but it's just something that I'm just sick and tired of hearing. And I think that the media really needs to get over it. And it's the unvaccinated players. Because, yes, they are on a team and blah, blah, blah. Let's give all the fucking stupid lectures that everybody wants to give. But I'm fucking sick to goddamn death of listening to the motherfucking lectures from all you almighties. Oh my God, this person's not vaccinated. It's like, shut the fuck up. So it was a huge discussion in the NBA this year because Kyrie Irving, he didn't get vaccinated. And since he played in Brooklyn, he really wasn't allowed to play in any of the home games up until like the end of the season. And even I was like, hey, that's the choice he made. But he also never really made it. He wasn't woe is me about it. He knew the consequences that came with this decision. He made the decision. He stood by the decision. And here we still are. Now we're into baseball season. And if you go to Toronto and you're unvaccinated, you can't get into the country of Canada because those are their rules. So there are some baseball teams that every time they go to play Toronto, they have to announce that such and such player isn't vaccinated, so they're put on the exempt list and they can't travel with us, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just sick to fucking death of all the goddamn lectures about it. And it's hilarious because the lectures are usually pointless anyways. So a couple months ago, a closer for the Red Sox, he wasn't vaccinated. And then the Red Sox actually ended up losing the series. And a lot of people were calling this guy out because they felt he could have won the series. They could have won the series had he actually been the closer for the series, but he wasn't. So they ended up losing it. And he did get vaccinated like right after that happened. So whoop-de-doo. He fell to the peer pressure. Congratulations to all you amazing people who like to sit there and say you're pro-choice when it comes to abortion, but you are happy to tell a person what the fuck to do with their body when it comes to a vaccination. You're a fucking hypocrite. Go fuck yourself. But I digress. So then this week, the St. Louis Cardinals, they had to go travel to Toronto. And two of their top players, Paul Goldschmidt, one of the top players in the league this year. He's definitely in the running for NL MVP, hands down. And then another one of their good players, Arenado, he's not vaccinated. So neither one of them could travel to the games or to the series this week against Toronto. And everybody was making a big stink about it. Oh my God, you guys are the best players on the team. You should be vaccinated. Blah, blah, blah. This is going to cost your team. Well, guess what, motherfuckers? It didn't cost them shit. Because guess what? The Cardinals actually ended up taking two of the three games they played against them. So it actually didn't cost them shit. But it had to be the great debate. Now the debates arose again. Because the Yankees, like I said, traded for Andrew Benintendi earlier this week, and he's not vaccinated. Oh my God, the horror! And so everybody, before he was, right when he got traded, everybody was talking about, oh, he's agreed to get vaccinated. He's agreed to get vaccinated. Oh my God, he's totally agreed to get vaccinated. And he's all like, I said I'm more open to it. I didn't say I was going to do it. I didn't say I was going to do anything. There's no agreement made on me getting vaccinated. But it's got to be the great fucking debate. And I'm just so fucking sick to death of listening to all you motherfuckers talk about people who aren't vaccinated. Guess what? If you're vaccinated, why do you fucking care what other people are doing with their motherfucking bodies? Shut the fuck up, all of you. You're all self-righteous motherfuckers. So sick to death of how everybody wants to fucking argue over abortion and how you're so happy to say, oh, somebody, you should be able to choose what you want to do with your body. But then in the next fucking sentence, when you're discussing vaccinations, you're happy to tell people they should be mandated and held down and forced to have a vaccine placed inside their body. That makes no sense. None whatsoever. You're either for it or against it. Me, personally, I'm pro-choice in all ways, shapes, and forms. Do whatever the fuck you want to do with your body. In anything. If you want to get an abortion, go get goddamn abortion. If you don't want to get vaccinated, don't fucking get vaccinated. If you want to smoke a cigarette, go fucking smoke a cigarette. If you want to eat bad food, go eat bad food. If you want to get plastic surgery, or you want to get tattoos, or you want to maim your fucking body however the fuck you want, do whatever you want with it. But I am so fucking sick of this every time now that a team goes to Toronto, we have to get the great debate. Shut the fuck up. COVID is now an endemic, meaning we should not even be giving a fuck about it anymore. Unless you work at a hospital, those are the only fucking people who should even be thinking about COVID anymore. And even they don't really have to think about it that much. Only the fucking, all you people who want to still hang on to COVID, still want to fucking talk about it. And I'm just sick to death of hearing about the unvaccinated players. This is why I'm happy that football season, they got rid of everything that has to do with COVID. They got rid of all their fucking rules. They got rid of masks. They don't give a shit if you're vaccinated. They're not testing anybody. You know why? Because we should all be moving the fuck on. So shut up about the unvaccinated players. Just shut up about it. It's their body. They could do whatever the fuck they want about it. And also, it's so amusing to me, because all you want to scold them about it, but none of them are asking you to feel sorry for them. None of them aren't taking responsibility. They are all taking responsibility for not being vaccinated. Not any one of them has said, oh, I should be playing right now. Oh, blah, blah. None of them are asking you to feel sorry for them. So shut up, get off your self-righteous fucking high horses, and shut the fuck up. God, I'm so fucking over this goddamn shit. But anyways, let's talk about something a little bit more exciting. This weekend, my shitty San Francisco Giants. Yeah, my shitty San Francisco Giants. These losers, they finally got a win last night. But they've been on a 7-game losing streak before that. And they've just been playing like the shittiest fucking team in baseball. Goddamn, I don't know what they're doing. But anyways, they are retiring Will Clark's number 22 this weekend on Saturday. And if you're a Giants fan, you gotta love Will Clark. Will Clark, he was only a Giant until 1993. So I was in third grade then. So I saw like the end of his Giant career. But man, I loved me some Will Clark. He played for the Giants from 1986 to 1993. Then he went to the Texas Rangers from 94 to 1998. Then he played for the Baltimore Orioles for 1999 to 2000, and then he was traded to the St. Louis Cardinals in 2000, and that's where he ended his career. I wouldn't call him one of the greatest players of all time. I'm actually not upset for once with the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's one of the players who isn't in the Hall of Fame yet. I think he's deserving of the Hall of Fame. But at the same time, I don't think he's like a first balloter, or he's a dude who should be in above other players. Say like, you know, Big Poppy was just inducted the other day. He shouldn't be considered to be better than Big Poppy. But he did have a great career. And the Giants are showing him respect this weekend by retiring his number 22, because he did a whole lot for the San Francisco Giants. Career-wise, he is a 6-time All-Star. He's won the NLCS MVP. He's a Gold Glove winner, 2-time Silver Slugger winner, NL RBI leader. He won the Golden Spikes Award when he was in college. His career statistics are his career batting average was a .303, 2,176 career hits, 284 career home runs, and 1,205 RBI. He's only batted below .300 4 times in his entire career. That, to me, is one of the best stats. Now, if you're a real baseball fan, you know the number one stat if you're a hitter, that you want to focus on is your batting average. And so if you are a regular 300 hitter, you are a great fucking hitter. You're a fantastic hitter. And to look at his statistics, and I'm like, shit, man, he only hit below 300 four times in his entire career. And really, the majority of his career, it was just stellar. And he was so consistent. And that's one of the things that I really loved about the dude, is that he just was such a fantastic player. He was also nominated for the MLB MVP five times. And four of those times was with San Francisco, but one of those times was with the Texas Rangers. So he didn't just dominate for the 49ers. I almost called them the 49ers, for the Giants, but he was dominant when he played for the Rangers and the Cardinals as well. The Baltimore Orioles, he kind of had a little bit of a down year. That's why they ended up trading him to the Cardinals. But I mean, overall, Will Clark was one of the most consistent hitters of all time. And so with that being said, today's Trop 5 is going to be the Trop 5 Will Clark moments. Starting with number 5, he actually played in the 1984 Summer Olympics, which was the inaugural year for baseball in the Olympics. And it wasn't really, I can't recall what the wording is they used for it, because I hate the Olympics. I couldn't give two shits and a fuck about that stupid, idiotic event. But they do have a word for kind of like new sports that are in, kind of like trial, but I really can't recall. But regardless, he played in the 1984 Summer Olympics, and they ended up finishing in second place behind Japan. It was Japan was gold, U.S. was silver, and I think it was China was bronze. And in the Olympics, he actually led the team with a .429 batting average, 9 hits, 8 RBI, and 3 home runs. So this dude, he started out as a killer behind the bat. I mean, he was great in college, and then he went into the Olympics, and he just absolutely dominated the Olympics. And then at number 4 in my Trop 5 Will Clark moments, April 8th, 1986. This was when he debuted with the San Francisco Giants. I just turned 1. My birthday is April 6, 1985. So I just turned 1 2 days before he started his stellar baseball playing career. And of course, in Will Clark fashion, he hit a home run on his first pitch off of one of the greatest pitchers of all time, Nolan Ryan. So I felt that was a great way for him to enter the league. Unfortunately, his rookie season was cut short due to, I believe it was an elbow injury. And so that would unfortunately, eventually cut short the rookie season. But he would come back and bounce back big the next year, which is actually number 3 on my Trop 5 Will Clark moments, the 1987 season. He really stormed back. This is just his second year in the league. He averaged a .308 batting average. He was he hit 91 RBIs and 35 home runs, and had an MVP nomination that year as well. And he was the first San Francisco Giants player since Bobby Mercer to drive in 90 runs. And he did that from 1987 to 1991. So that was a very great year for him. Well, 86, he came in. He was definitely one of the hottest rookies. Everybody was talking about him. And then the injury, it screwed him over. It ended the rest of his season. So you didn't know what to expect from him in the 1987 season. But he really dominated in 1987. And I just felt like there wasn't a specific moment. It just, he just had such a great year and you could just tell that after 87, he was really going to take off, which he did the next year. And that would lead us into my number 2 Trop 5 Will Clark moments is 1988. The 1988 season, he ended up just losing the batting title that year on the last game of the year. He ended up having he led the NL in RBIs with 109. He had 29 home runs and batted a .282. So that was one of the 4 seasons he batted below 300. But he still had a phenomenal year. That was the first year he was nominated for the All-Star game. He also, once again, was an MVP nomination. So he just kept getting better with each and every year coming into the league. And now my number one top five Will Clark moment is the 1989 NLCS versus the Chicago Cubs. He had one of the most dominating performances in a championship series that a player has ever had. First of all, his stats for just the NLCS alone, his batting average was a 650. Yeah, you heard me. A 650. 650. And he had two home runs, and he actually ended up winning the NLCS MVP. But it wasn't just the overall NLCS that he dominated. Game one, he came out in the first inning, he had a double. The third inning, he had a home run. The fourth inning, he had a grand slam. Now, interesting story on this grand slam. Who was the pitcher? Was it Greg Maddux? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Greg Maddux who was the pitcher. Yet another amazing pitcher in the game. One of the infielders or the catcher, they were having a conversation. And Will Clark ended up reading their lips, and he could read what the next pitch was going to be, and that's how he ended up hitting that grand slam. And so that is now why when you see a catcher go to the pitching mound or a manager come out to the pitching mound, that they cover up their lips because of that play right there. Because Will Clark, he even admitted, yeah, I saw what they were saying. And so he ended up with a grand slam. And then in the sixth inning, he ended up with a single. And then in the eighth, he ended up getting a walk. And so in this game, game one of the NLCS, he ended up making a single game playoff record with six RBIs. And then an NL record for the playoffs with 11 total bases. And then he tied an NLCS record with hits, runs scored, and most times reaching base safely. The grand slam, when he hit this grand slam, they were tied at one in the eighth. And so, my handwriting, I read the wrong thing. In game five, they were tied at one going to the eighth, and then Will Clark ended up walking up to bat. He hit a single, which ended up driving in two runs, and that ultimately would send the Giants onto the World Series. Now, unfortunately, they would get swept in this World Series. They would go on to play the Oakland A's, who are actually one of the best teams in the league at that current point in time, and they were swept. And also of note, if you don't remember, in that 1989 World Series, that was the one World Series that actually got interrupted by an earthquake. And fun little Katie Tropp fact, if you'd like to know, my very first memory actually is of that earthquake because I was born in San Jose, California, lived there till I was about 5 years old. And so I was there in 1989. I was actually in preschool. I was 4 years old. I was in preschool. This happened like in the middle of the day, close to kind of like when our parents were picking us up. So we were kind of like in there was like a front area where you could just play with your toys and whatever. And so I remember the room started to shake, of course. And the teacher grabs all of us and says, "Get out of here. We got to go to the back." And she takes us to the back area. We all sit in a circle on the grass, and we all put our arms around each other, and we're all sitting in this big circle, and she tells us to put our heads down. And no lie, this is not a lie, y'all. I turn to my friend, and I look at my friend, and at the age of four, I say to my friend, "How is this going to save us?" So if you've ever been wondering, has Katie always been a smartass? Yes, Katie has always been a smartass from day one. Because yes, my first memory is me being a fucking smartass. It was a very scary experience, by the way. Especially like the aftermath, I think was even worse, because then it's like, you know, you've got aftershocks coming, and then, you know, your family's just like, "Oh my God, what's going to happen? Is this tree going to fall over?" And then it's like, then you get home and all your shit's just thrown around. And then also some bridges had collapsed. So it was just a crazy day, but that is my first memory is of that 1989 earthquake. that interrupted the World Series and delayed it for 2 weeks. So, like I said, if you've ever been wondering if Katie's always been a smartass her entire life, yes, motherfuckers, I've always been a smartass. Even at 4 years old, I was a smartass questioning, why the hell are we sitting in a circle? How is this fucking circle of retarded kids bowing their heads down? How is this going to save us? It's not. But, you know, it's as stupid as wearing those dumbass yarn ball guardian helmets that the NFL players have to play with. So, that's the top five this week. Will Clark, he's going to have his number retired tomorrow with the Giants. I'm sure they're going to, I'd say they're going to win it for Will, but the Giants suck so bad this year that they're probably going to get their asses kicked, and they will need Will Clark to come into the game and play for them, but that he's a bit too old to do that nowadays. So that's the top five this week. Enjoy the weekend of sports. We've got tons of baseball on tap. Should get interesting now that training camps are underway. So we'll see what happens with the weekend of sports. And I will talk to you fucktards on Monday.